Welcome to the reading of the Ames Tribune for Tuesday, June 29, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Frances. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Podcasts of this program and most of our other programs are available on our website, which is iowaradioreading.org. Taking a look at the front page of the Ames Tribune today, what to know about mosquitoes during a drought year. Fireworks parades are back after cancellations last year. Guan Wang returns home to open Ichabod restaurant. And one killed, one injured in car crash near Boone. We'll start with that story since it's hard news. This is from Isabella Rosario of the Ames Tribune. A two-vehicle crash in Boone County killed one driver and injured another this weekend. The crash happened at the intersection of 210th Street and R Avenue at about 11:25 a.m. Sunday. Alexander John Ziegler, age 22, of Boone, was traveling eastbound when a Chevy Traverse traveling southbound allegedly failed to stop at a stop sign and struck Ziegler's Chevy Silverado. Ziegler died on the scene and was not wearing a seatbelt, according to the crash report. The driver of the Chevy Traverse was transported by ambulance to the Boone County Hospital. The Iowa State Patrol was assisted by the Boone County Sheriff's Office, and the crash remains under investigation. Next story, front page. What to know about mosquitoes during a drought year? And it shows a full-color photograph of, way too close up, of a mosquito on someone's human skin getting ready to pierce that skin. This is from Philip Sitter of the Ames Tribune. Don't put away that bug spray just because it's been a dry year overall. Mosquitoes need standing water for their eggs and larvae to hatch and grow in. So a drought like the one Iowa is experiencing does affect mosquito population numbers. However, Ryan Smith, an entomology professor at Iowa State University who leads ISU's work in mosquito and mosquito-borne disease surveillance, as well as the same kind of work for ticks, called drought kind of a double-edged sword that can mean fewer of the mosquitoes that are most likely to drop blood from people, but that can also correlate with a higher intensity of West Nile virus among the remaining mosquito populations. Entomology and public health researchers across Iowa track mosquito populations, and their insights offer a picture of the potential for mosquito-borne diseases, drought or no drought. The Iowa Mosquito Surveillance System has counted more than 2.8 million, I'm going to spell this, AEDES, Aedes vexans mosquitoes over its entire history. Smith said, such nuisance mosquitoes, which represent the majority of what's caught in traps, are annoying, especially because they can be high in number, but they do not really transmit human disease. Nuisance mosquitoes are very much influenced by rainfall, and after rain or flooding, quote, we get these huge population explosions of mosquitoes, he said. Other mosquito species are not as affected by rainfall or a lack of it. However, such as Culex varieties, those are the ones that can transmit West Nile virus. Culex pipiens mosquitoes have been the most counted after Aedes vexans by the state's surveillance system at almost 486,000. Smith said, Culex populations tend to remain more constant, and warm and dry conditions often correlate with higher levels of West Nile virus, which often peaks in August or September. He said people still need to take precautions, such as dumping out water that collects around the home after it rains, and using insect repellent spray. That becomes more important as we move further into the summer. What does mosquito counting show about diseases in Iowa? There were only 3 cases of West Nile virus reported in Iowa last year, none of them fatal, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There were 664 cases reported across the continental U.S., and 52 were fatal. Most people who are infected with West Nile, 80%, never show any symptoms, according to the World Health Organization. West Nile is not the only disease, and Culex mosquitoes are not the only ones that researchers are keeping an eye out for, however. The Iowa Department of Public Health lists among mosquito-borne diseases several that are not found in Iowa, like dengue, malaria, chikungunya, and Zika, and others such as La Crosse encephalitis and St. Louis encephalitis that are rare in the state. Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus, the mosquitoes that can carry dengue, chikungunya, and Zika, are likely or very unlikely to be able to live and reproduce in most of Iowa, according to the mosquito surveillance system. But those mosquitoes are being tracked to identify their distribution across the state. Only 31 Aedes albopictus mosquitoes have ever been logged after being trapped in Iowa, and no Aedes aegypti mosquitoes have ever been logged, though there have been more than 11,000 Aedes mosquitoes that have been found that are not more specifically identified. Smith said several counties have trap networks, and in many cases, local public health partners are involved. He said traps attract mosquitoes in ways such as using stagnant water, dry ice that releases carbon dioxide, which mosquitoes are attracted to on people and animals' breath, or light, and then fans pull the insects into the trap. In terms of avoiding mosquitoes this or any other summer, IDPH's tips include wearing light-colored long sleeves and pants, making sure windows and doors have tight-fitting screens, and making sure there are no clogged or leaky gutters, faucets, air conditioners, or hoses around that can create pools of water. Next story. Fireworks and parades are back after cancellations last year. Last year, the pandemic forced the cancellation of parades and fireworks displays, stunting beloved 4th of July traditions. This year, vaccination availability and low COVID-19 case numbers mean people will be celebrating America's independence as they did before 2020. Still, finalizing your Independence Day plans, here's what is planned in Story and Boone counties. In Ames, the city will host a fireworks display near Jack Trice Stadium July 3 at dusk, typically around 9:30 p.m. The 4th of July parade in Ames downtown is back this year from 11 to 1. The city officially retired the annual community breakfast. Ames launched the Ames Appreciation Project, which aims to bring neighbors together. Neighborhoods will be able to make banners and participate in the 4th of July parade. The Furman Aquatic Center will stay open for Independence Day from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for tot time, lap swim, water walking, and from 1 to 6 p.m. for open swim. The annual Friendship Arc 5K on the 4th will be held virtually this year from June 26 to July 5. Lighting fireworks in Ames city limits is illegal and could result in a minimum fine of $250. In 2016, Slater appeared on a list of 10 Iowa cities that do independence right. Now their celebrations, which span back to 1889, are coming back. The holiday will kick off July 3rd with a Ballard Kiwanis 5K run, registration 6:15 a.m., and an 8 a.m. pancake breakfast, both at the Nelson Park stage. The parade will begin at 10 a.m., period. Starting at 11 a.m., a beer garden, food and crafts, and a carnival will be available at Nelson Park. And the community band and chorus will perform at 12:30 p.m. Casey Musickman, a contestant on Season 3 of The Voice, will perform at 8 p.m., and the fireworks will begin at 10 p.m. On the 4th, the carnival, food, and crafts will continue at 11 a.m. The day will end with the Queen crowning and raffle at 6 p.m. and a performance by Rock Solid at 7:30 p.m. Visit slateriowa.org or the Slater Iowa Community Club Facebook page for more information on the events planned. Nevada. Start off the holiday with a drive-through or dine-in pancake breakfast at the Nevada Fire Station, located at 935 Lincoln Highway. This will be July 4th, and they're asking for a free will donation. The parade will start 11 a.m. July 4th, north on 6th Street from East Avenue, then east on J Avenue to 10th Street. Root beer floats will be available at the American Legion Hall at 1331 6th Street after the parade, and they are asking for a free will donation on that as well. The American Legion Auxiliary will serve its traditional chicken noodle dinner July 3rd, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The cost for that is $10 for adults and $5 for children. And the fireworks begin on July 4th at dusk. They will originate at the east side of SCORE, which is located at 1543 Fawcett Parkway along 19th Street. The Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home and Crematory at 1418 Fawcett Parkway will serve free popcorn, snow cones, and bottled water before the fireworks. Boone. The annual Eve of Destruction will be back July 4th at the Boone Speedway. Past years have involved a demolition derby, rollover contest, and a redneck slip and slide before blowing off fireworks. The pit gates will open at 4:30 p.m., and regular gates will be 5:30 p.m., hot laps at 6 p.m., and racing begins at 7. Tickets, $15 for adults, $5 for those 13 to 17. Children 12 or under will be admitted for free. You can get a pit pass for $25. Roland. The city of Roland is celebrating its sesquicentennial July 3rd. It's more of a 150th plus one celebration after the big event was canceled last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, according to Roland Mayor Andy Webb. Parade begins at 10 a.m. Celebration will include food, water activities, a school reunion, music, and historical events. There will be a fireworks display in Roland beginning at dusk. And the final story from the front page. This is from Rana Faborg of the Ames Tribune. Ikebon, a new Japanese restaurant in Campustown, opened for business kind of by accident on June 11th. Located at 117 Welch Avenue, Ikebon's opening didn't exactly go as owner Guan Wang had planned. After an Iowa State student with a food blog posted some photos and incorrectly listed the date for the restaurant's soft opening, people just started showing up. That day, he had his staff come to the restaurant to run through the menu items, cooking some of each item. "We opened accidentally," Wang said. "I was actually going to bring the food that we cooked to nearby businesses and bars and just give it to them. But around 5 p.m., people started creeping in." Quote, "We didn't have the open sign on or anything, but the doors were unlocked because we were coming in and out a lot," he said. Wang's mom, Ling Lu, who owns the Wok and Roll Chinese restaurant across the street, was helping at Ikebon and started seating people. Quote, "It's not exactly how I wanted to open, but the people liked the food. So the next day we just kind of continued it," Wang said. The impromptu opening day marked Wang's official start as a restaurateur, a position he arrived at by way of a career in international hockey. He's still adjusting the menu, which includes a variety of sushi, sashimi, ramen, hibachi bento boxes, and appetizers such as crab rangoon mozzarella sticks, tempura shrimp, and renkan chips, which are fried lotus root. Wang wants to keep the menu simple at first, so we can make the essentials as perfectly as we can, he said. "I want to add a spicy miso ramen," he said. "Our Ikebon ramen was so popular that we actually sold out." It's Ikebon's traditional tonkatsu ramen made with pork belly. Quote, We make the pork belly ourselves. It's rolled up and we put it on the flat grill for about 30 minutes, each side for like 15 minutes. Then we put it in a big pot and slow cook it for 4 or 5 hours, Wang said. He thinks the spicy miso ramen will be made with chicken as the protein. Our Godzilla roll is really popular too, Wang said. It's fried sushi. We roll it, then batter it in tempura and fry it. My favorite sushi roll is the Fujiyama. It's salmon and fish eggs and spicy mayo on the top. Mr. Liu is the sushi chef, and Mr. Wu is on the grill, Wang said. Ichiban's bento boxes offer an entree like salmon or beef, along with rice, salad, and a Cali roll or tempura shrimp. We do the shrimp tempura ourselves, Wang said. We peel the shrimp and then use a sushi mat to lengthen it. The sushi mat is called a makisu. Wang is Chinese. Ichiban is Japanese and is Wang's first foray into restaurant ownership. This is my first restaurant, he said. My real job is coaching professional ice hockey. He said he was coaching in Russia when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. I was living in Beijing because I was supposed to coach at the 2022 Olympics in Beijing, he said. At first, he was a hockey player, joining the Continental Hockey League, which starts with a K, or KHL, after he went to college at Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. Quote, it's the Russian Super League, Wang said. They were trying to promote hockey for the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics. I'd actually quit hockey in college because I got into a phase where I just didn't love it anymore. But as soon as I quit, I was like, I'm missing something from my life. Wang's first job out of college was working for the U.S. government, doing international trade in Middletown, Connecticut. If companies wanted to export or import to or from China, Wang would help facilitate it. His dad, Anfu Wang, brought up the idea of international hockey. Wang was hesitant at first, he said, but then decided, let's do it. I quit my job and I went to Finland for training, he said. Then after my first season, I got hurt. My team was like, you can speak Chinese and you can speak English and you know hockey. You're like a unicorn. They encouraged him to become a coach. Wang was hesitant. He had just quit his job to become a player. They told me I could coach in the Olympics for Team China, Wang said. I thought, wow, that's a pretty special experience. He coached with the Chinese national team for a year and helped take the team to the World Championships in Tilburg, the Netherlands. That was a lot of fun. It was a lot of travel, but it was really high-level hockey, and that was a blast, he said. I really miss that, but then COVID happened. Wang may still be tempted back to the hockey world to coach the Chinese women's team. So I'm kind of caught in the middle again, he said. If I do get the job, will I pack my bags and go, or will I stay here? Fortunately, his family in Ames may be able to help if he takes the hockey path again. Wang's parents have many years of restaurant experience. They used to work at Hy-Vee, he said. They owned May House before it was May House. They've helped me a lot. His parents didn't exactly see his vision for Ichiban when he first started planning his restaurant, Wang said. But they're on board now. At first, he was strictly going to sell sushi tacos, he said, after tasting the dish while he was in Korea. I thought it was a great idea, he said. They take seaweed and then fry it tempura and then fill it with sushi filling. It's like a to-go sushi. Although he plans to add sushi tacos to the menu at some point in the future, Wang decided he was limiting himself if he just had that one menu item in his Japanese restaurant. His idea to include ramen on the menu also occurred to him when he was traveling in Korea. Korea was a huge inspiration for me for Japanese food, he said. I had a lot of Japanese food in China, but that time I was in Korea and had ramen, I was like, what is this? This is life-changing. Hockey has had a huge impact in Wang's life since his childhood. Although he's from Ames, he attended high school in Minnesota to play hockey. Hockey has brought me everywhere, and Ichiban brought me back home, Wang said. And then it shows a photo, a full-color photo of a bowl, of ramen with a wooden spoon. Moving over to the second page, emergency alert all clear near Iowa State University apartments. This is from Isabella Rosario of the Tribune. The Iowa State University Police Department evacuated three campus apartment buildings after a suspicious item was reported around 9:20 a.m. Monday. The item was later determined not to be a threat, according to a police news release. ISU police discovered a suitcase and a case connected by wires in the grass near the roadway by building 34 at Frederickson Court Apartments, the release said. Officers contacted the state fire marshal's office for assistance and evacuated staff in buildings 31, 33, and 34 to the Frederickson Court Community Center. The apartments are otherwise unoccupied for the summer, according to police. Around 10 a.m., the campus community received an ISU alert about a suspicious package that told people to avoid the area. The state fire marshal's office determined the items posed no threat, and ISU police secured the items. The scene was cleared at 12:28 p.m., police said. At 12:31 p.m., ISU police sent an all-clear message advising the community to resume normal activities. In a news release at 12:40 p.m., university officials said, quote, the suspicious item reported at Frederickson Court was inspected and determined not to be a threat. Iowa fireworks vendors balance increased demand and national shortage. This is from Robin Opsahl of the Des Moines Register. This is not the year for Iowans to put off shopping for fireworks until the last minute. Thanks to pandemic-related shipping delays and continued brisk sales after a record-setting 2020, the supply of personal fireworks may not meet the demand for popular items like sparklers and Roman candles, said local vendors. Most people don't start thinking about fireworks until the calendar turns to July, said Wade Peterson, owner of Iowa Fireworks Farm. If you want the best selection, you want to get in while it's still June. Last year, the United States did not celebrate Independence Day like normal. Restrictions on large gatherings to stop the spread of COVID-19 meant most public fireworks shows and 4th of July celebrations were canceled. That led to more people than ever buying fireworks for personal use. According to the American Pyrotechnics Association, Americans purchased 385.8 million pounds of consumer fireworks in 2020. That compares to nearly 250 million pounds in 2019. It was the perfect storm for fireworks, Peterson said. When the cities decided not to put on their usual fireworks shows, Average Joe decided, well, I'm going to do them myself. Despite the return of most public 4th of July celebrations and fireworks shows this year, Iowa vendors are still seeing nearly unprecedented demand. Quote, there's more options this summer in terms of going out to a restaurant or a park to celebrate the 4th, but we're still seeing an incredible demand, Terhark said. We're seeing lots of newbies and people who enjoyed setting off their own last year, coming in to pick things up. There will be more and more as we get closer to the 4th of July. Iowa Fireworks Company planned ahead for this year, making orders earlier than normal, and are still barely keeping up due to shipping delays caused in part by a shortage of available international shipping containers. Peterson from the Iowa Fireworks Farm said shipping costs on containers from China, the world's largest manufacturer of fireworks, have more than doubled in price because of the COVID-19 pandemic. That cost means higher prices to consumers. It's not just fireworks. Everything from lumber to a new iPhone is more expensive right now, he said. So we're not seeing too much sticker shock. People come in and see the higher prices and think, yep, just like everywhere else. Getting closer to the 4th of July, some fireworks at local vendors may run out of stock, both business owners said. But fireworks vendors and warehouses are more concerned about how to stock up for the next few years. Terhark, with the Iowa Fireworks Company, said it could take 3 to 4 years to return to a typical pre-COVID fireworks supply. Because of the limited supply, it's important for people who want to set up their own fireworks this year to act sooner rather than later, he said. And then it shows a photo of a young man purchasing some fireworks at the Iowa Fireworks Company in Clive. Next article. Study says Iowa's teaching standards in civics and U.S. history is inadequate. This is from Samantha Hernandez of the Register. The Iowa Department of Education's civics and U.S. history standards are, quote, inadequate, according to a new study by the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. The State of State Standards for Civics and U.S. History in 2021, released Wednesday, evaluates the quality of the K-12 civics and U.S. history standards used in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Researchers reviewed the Iowa Department of Education's 2017 social studies standards, which cover kindergarten through 12th grade instruction. Researchers evaluated the standards for content, rigor, clarity, and organization. The Fordham Institute focuses on improving education. Study co-author David Griffith, a senior research and policy associate at the Fordham Institute, said in an email that Iowa ranked at the bottom third of states, or in the bottom third of states, receiving a D, as in dog, for its civics standards and an F, as in Frank, for its U.S. history standards. Neighboring Wisconsin, Illinois, and Nebraska were also among the 20 states with standards rated as inadequate. The states that ranked exemplary include Alabama, California, Massachusetts, and Tennessee. Iowa's current civics and U.S. history standards are inadequate, and there is no discernible coverage of U.S. history at the K-8 level, the authors stated in the report. A complete revision of the state standards was recommended. But Iowa officials say the standards are well-researched and appropriate. Quote, Iowa's academic standards provide a set of common expectations for school districts across the state, while allowing for decisions regarding curriculum and how it is delivered to be made locally, said Heather Doe, who is the communications director for the Iowa Department of Education, and she said that in an email Friday. It continues, local districts make decisions about which specific historical content best meets the needs of the communities they serve, while using the approach of teaching critical thinking skills that are reflected in Iowa's social studies standards, unquote. Iowa's academic standards, including social studies, quote, underwent an extensive standards review, development, and adoption process starting in 2015, Doe said. Iowa educators and social studies professionals assisted with the work, she said. The standards were approved by the State Board of Education. The standards reflect Iowa's priority for teaching students to be critical thinkers about the information they encounter, as opposed to memorization of a list of facts, Doe said. A Des Moines administrator on Thursday also defended the way the state standards are presented. The type of social studies or history education people received years ago is not necessarily in service to all of our students anymore, said Sarah Dougherty, Des Moines Public Schools Director of Secondary Teaching and Learning. She said the flexibility offered in the presentation of the state's standards, quote, allows us to go more broadly into the understanding of society and look beyond a white, heteronormative view of history and social studies, unquote. The authors broke down the issues it found with the state's civics standards into strengths and weaknesses. The strengths of Iowa's civics standards included careful attention to citizenship skills and dispositions from kindergarten through fifth grade, and the intentional development of critical thinking skills in sixth through 12th grade. Weaknesses included the standards being too broad and vague to provide useful guidance, a lack of standards for sixth grade students, and standards for fifth grade students that, quote, fail to call attention to or develop Iowa's rich history of civil rights, unquote. Study: U.S. history standards need more content. The study noted that the state's U.S. history standards demonstrated strength in their reasonably strong emphasis on history-related skills. Weaknesses included the standards being, quote, almost completely devoid of historical content, not providing direction for educators, and there being no meaningful U.S. history coverage before eighth grade. Griffith offered some advice for improving Iowa's civics and U.S. history standards. Quote, provide a more rigorous introduction to civics in elementary and middle school, and ensure that students make at least one full pass through U.S. history prior to high school, he said in an email. Organize the high school standards by course and provide much more specific and detailed guidance in both subjects. Des Moines official, finding appropriate classroom materials challenging. The classes that used to be taught were often selective and whitewashed, said Doherty, the Des Moines administrator. Quote, in my mind, what that study responds with is that there's not enough specificity, right? Like, why aren't all fourth graders learning about the Revolutionary War or things like that, she said. One challenge with the state standards is finding materials that reflect the lived realities, past and present, of people in the United States and around the world that can be used in the classroom, she said. Quote, that's what I find challenging, and that's what we find challenging here in the Des Moines Public Schools, developing and adapting materials and tests that meet the bar of really providing a culturally responsive view of society, civics, and history, Doherty said. And here's a reminder that you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. You can check out our website, and you'll find podcasts and ways to listen to our live stream and lots of information at iowaradioreading.org. Time to turn to the obituaries, and we just have a couple of them. Alma L. O'Donnell. Alma L. O'Donnell, age 101, of Nevada, died Sunday, June 20, at Story County Senior Care in Nevada. Alma was born April 16, 1920, on a farm near Story City, the daughter of Milford and Ava Corbin Baldus. She started school in Gilbert and graduated from Story High School in 1937. Following graduation, Alma worked with her father in his business and moved to Nevada in 1942. Alma started singing at the age of 7. She sang for many weddings and funerals at St. Peter and Paul near Gilbert, St. Mary's in Colo, and St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Nevada. On November 30, 1946, she was united in marriage to Ernest Thorison. To this union, they had three children, John, Philip, and Anne. Ernest passed away in 1951. October 8, 1952, Alma married Jack O'Donnell. Into this union, another daughter, Mary, was born. Jack died in 2005. Alma worked as an executive secretary for the Selective Service and was named runner-up top executive in the United States. She retired in 1982 from the Social Security Administration. Alma was a member of the St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Nevada, St. Francis Study Club, choir director at St. Mary's in Colo, and served as a 4-H leader. She was active in the Iowa Unit Wally Byam Caravan Club, was the first lady president of the Arizona Unit of WBCCI, and of the Superstition Resort in Apache Junction, Arizona. Jack and Alma were very active in these clubs, hosting rallies, serving on committees and skits for 18 years. She was the recreation chairwoman on a Wally Byam Airstream International and two region caravans. After retirement, their home for 8 years was an Airstream travel trailer. Alma loved to travel and visited every state in the USA, mostly with the Airstream, and also visited several countries. Her husband, Jack, suffered double vertical vision in his later years. But Alma took over the wheel and drove the Airstream to Mexico, the West Coast, and Canada, and almost anywhere wheels would go. She enjoyed being part of the Airstream Club for 30 years. After age 70, Alma took up hobbies of tap dancing, oil painting, china painting, and playing different musical instruments. She always carried an electric organ with her in the Airstream. She loved playing bridge, and in her later years, she played every Monday afternoon in their retirement home. In 2001, when Alma and Jack returned to Iowa to be closer to family, she began to exercise. She gave credit to Fit for Life, and twice a week to weight training, mother's genes, a wonderful dog, great husbands, children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and traveling for the many years that she had here on Earth. Her little house, good neighbors, church community for the wonderful, tragic at times, but mostly filled with laughter and many friends. For those that knew Alma, they understood that she enjoyed being just plain crazy. Tragedy made her a stronger woman, but she also managed to have a life full of joy, love of a wonderful husband, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and her dog, Shishi. Alma is survived by her son, John, and Gaynell O'Donnell, and their children, Josh and Jenny, Alex, Haley, and Hannah, son, Phil, and Barb O'Donnell, and their children, Justin Rush and Kayla O'Donnell, daughter, Ann McMillan, and her children, Devon and Sydney, Amber and Abram McMillan, Grace and Gwendolyn, and Zeb and Andrew McMillan, Akira and Avni, her daughter Mary and Claire Rue and their children, Jason and Denny Rue, with Denon and Dane, and Heather and TJ Harris with Cameron. Alma is preceded in death by her husbands, Ernest Thorison and Jack O'Donnell, parents, brothers, and sisters. A mass of Christian burial will happen Saturday, July 10, 10:30 a.m., St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Nevada. Father Rick Daggett officiating. Private family burial will be at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Nevada. Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home in Nevada is handling arrangements, and condolences may be sent to the family. Next obituary, Adrian Ari Lucas, age 92, passed away peacefully Friday, June 25th. He was born July 2nd, 1928, in Sheldon, Iowa, to Ari and Jacomina Alita Beltman Lucas. He was a beloved husband, dad, grandfather, brother, and friend. He will be missed by all that knew him. Adrian is survived by daughter Kathy Lucas and Pat Ham of Ames, son Michael Allen Lucas of Lori, Missouri, four grandchildren, and five great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his wife of 67 years, Marion Carol Meester Lucas, his parents, three brothers, and two sisters. Funeral services, Tuesday, July 6, 11 a.m. at the Gilbert Lutheran Church in Gilbert. Visitation begins at 10 a.m. until service time, Tuesday morning. Interment will follow at the Ames Municipal Cemetery. Online condolences and thoughtful memories can be shared at StevensMemorialChapel.com. And moving over to the opinion page, the political cartoon, it's a black and white cartoon. It looks to be like a medallion or even a coin. Sometimes, as we know, the quarters, there's a quarter for each state. This kind of looks like that. Across the top, it says the Sunshine State. And in the center, we have a drawing of a woman collapsed to the ground, sobbing, in front of the collapsed condominium in Florida. Next to her is a newspaper, the Miami Herald, with the headline, Collapse, Heartbreak. And then at the bottom of the emblem, it says, En Dios Confiamos, which in English means In God We Trust. So that's a political cartoon for today. Other opinion, this is your turn, and this is from actually 40 infectious disease doctors, guest columnists, and it's entitled, Why We 40 Infectious Disease Doctors Recommend COVID-19 Vaccines. In the United States, there have been over 600,000 deaths due to COVID-19, including more than 6,000 in Iowa. We, as infectious disease physicians, have seen firsthand the health impacts of COVID-19, including patients who have died from lung failure and people who have struggled with the prolonged effects of the disease. Many Iowans have questions about whether the COVID-19 vaccines are safe. Some believe they may be taking on a bigger risk by getting vaccinated than by remaining unprotected from COVID-19. Having questions about any new medical option is understandable and is an opportunity to engage in conversation with a trusted healthcare provider. Below, we provide some of the reasons why we trust that the COVID-19 vaccines are both safe and effective and why we recommend them to our patients. Number one, the testing of vaccine safety was thorough and no faster than usual. The pace of COVID-19 vaccine development was greatly aided by decades of prior research on similar viruses and vaccines. In other words, developing the COVID-19 vaccine was like starting a 100-meter dash at the 90-meter line. The different phases of safety testing for the COVID-19 vaccines have taken the same amount of time as any other approved vaccine. All clinical trials of the COVID-19 vaccine were performed in tens of thousands of participants and followed participants for at least 8 weeks, as this was the time frame when delayed side effects, which are rare, have occurred with other vaccines. After emergency use authorization was granted by the Food and Drug Administration, there has been ongoing monitoring for adverse effects among more than 170 million Americans now vaccinated. And reported effects were further investigated to determine whether they were related to vaccination. This population-wide surveillance has confirmed the safety of the three available COVID-19 vaccines. Full FDA approval has been requested for two of the three available vaccines, and a request for the third vaccine is also anticipated. Number two, the safety and effectiveness of all available COVID-19 vaccines has been carefully reviewed by respected agencies entrusted with protecting the public's health. Before the vaccines were recommended for use, their safety and effectiveness data was evaluated by three panels of experts as outlined below. The members of each committee were carefully screened to ensure that they lack any financial interest with the vaccine manufacturers. These three groups were scientists and physicians who work at the FDA, which is one of the nation's oldest and most respected public health agencies, an external independent advisory committee to the FDA, made up of medical and public health experts, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, a group of additional medical and public health experts who develop recommendations for the U.S. population on the use of all vaccines, including routine vaccinations offered to children and adults. Number three, vaccination will protect you and the people around you who are at higher risk from COVID-19. A compelling reason to get vaccinated is that these vaccines are among the most effective vaccines ever created. People who get a COVID-19 vaccine are significantly less likely to get infected and are nearly 100% protected from developing COVID-19 symptoms that are severe enough to result in hospitalization or death. The vaccines also provide excellent protection against the severest forms of disease caused by the many variants emerging around the globe. Even though your decision to get vaccinated is a personal one, your decision may affect those around you. Getting vaccinated will make it far less likely that you will pass the virus on to your family, your friends, or others in the community who are at increased risk for severe illness. While we are still determining how long the vaccine protection will last, vaccination will have a role even after the pandemic ends, because we expect the virus that causes COVID-19 to circulate among the population for a long time, much like the flu and other respiratory viruses. For this reason, we, like many medical experts, anticipate another surge of COVID-19 cases this upcoming winter. The bottom line? Medical research and real-world experience have shown that the COVID-19 vaccines are both effective and safe. Widespread vaccination is the quickest way to safely get back to a more normal way of life. We have all been vaccinated against COVID-19, and we've encouraged our patients, family members, and friends to do the same. However, the decision about vaccination is ultimately your own to make. We encourage you to contact your healthcare provider to start a conversation about vaccination, as we believe it's an important decision that affects not only you, but others as well. In this statement, was endorsed by the following infectious disease physicians in Iowa: Ahmed Abu Al-Fowl of Cedar Rapids, Anissa Efroz of Des Moines, Alpheus B. Apenheimer of Iowa City, Jason Barker, Iowa City, Layla Best, Des Moines, Honorio Caceres of Dubuque, Sandra Crocera of Mason City, Daniel Dykema, Iowa City, Rima L. Herte, Council Bluffs, Dan Fulton of Ames, Michihiko Goto of Iowa City, Laureen Herwalt, Iowa City, Dalik Inse, Iowa City, Louis Katz, Davenport, Kwanhate Kaipuwat of Iowa City, I apologize for that one, Sudhir Kumar of Des Moines, David Kuzner, Iowa City, Daniel Lampte, Sioux City, Roshan Lewis, Des Moines, Daniel Lavorsi, Iowa City, Ayu Matsumoto, Iowa City, Jeffrey Meyer, Iowa City, Ilanka Molano, Iowa City, Bharat Motwani, Davenport, Lemuel Nan, Iowa City, Michael Ohl, Iowa City, Amy Patel, Waterloo, Kunatum Prasad Thratsant of Iowa City, Lindsay Reariggh, Rearig of Ames, Casey Rice, Des Moines, Maria Romero Alvarez of Des Moines, Purani Sakar, Iowa City, Hendrick Schultz of Dubuque, Megan Srinavas of Fort Dodge, Jack Stapleton of Iowa City, Hiroyuki Suzuki of Iowa City, David Torero of Des Moines, Lisa Veach, Des Moines, Ravi Vemuri, Des Moines, Todd Wimblin of Iowa City. And the statement was written by Dr. Lavorsiand Aaron Shearer. And from the opinion page, Ames Library Notes, what will you read next? This is from Kathy Cooney of the Ames Public Library. With so many fantastic books in the world and in the library, how do you narrow down your options? Some readers choose what to read based on their mood. Others go through phases where they only pick one type of book. I once read nothing but cozy mysteries for 2 years. Some move alphabetically through a list, or grab a book with an eye-catching cover, binge a series by series, or follow an order only they understand. What do all these readers have in common? No matter what method you use, at some point, you will finish your current book and need to decide on your next literary adventure. If you're stuck, Ames Public Library is here to help. If you know you want to read something everyone's talking about, check out our Quick Picks collection. These bestsellers and popular titles do not require you to wait on hold. So if you see a book on the shelf you want to read, you can borrow it for 1 week, no renewals, and find out what all the fuss is about. Some of the titles currently featured include The President's Daughter by Bill Clinton and James Patterson, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, While Justice Sleeps by Stacey Abrams, The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, That Summer by Jennifer Weiner, and One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston. You'll find the quick picks on the second floor, by the new books and audio? Have a favorite genre, but feel like you're stuck revisiting the same old handful of authors? Sign up for one or all of our book newsletters located at amespubliclibrary.org/book-newsletters! I'm not sure if the exclamation point is on the website or not. These newsletters offer a variety of different adult fiction genres and feature both new releases and a selection of older titles on a theme. For example, this month highlights Mysteries in the Great Outdoors, Christian fiction set on beaches, under the radar but excellent sci-fi and fantasy, fiction featuring animals as main characters, the 2020 Bram Stoker Award winners in horror fiction, wedding-themed romance, and more. If you see something you're interested in, just click on the title to head straight to the APL catalog to place it on hold. Newsletters come regularly, but no more than once a week, and they include so much variety, you're almost guaranteed to find something of interest. Not sure where to start? It sounds like you need personalized picks. APL's Personalized Picks asks you to fill out a short form about your preferences, then sends it to a staff member who will curate a custom list of recommendations for you. The list links to our catalog so you can read more about the titles or place them on hold. We also welcome your feedback. If the titles in the list do not quite fit your interests, we will gladly revisit the list and send new recommendations. If they were exactly your cup of tea, we can enthusiastically recommend more in the same vein. Of course, I can't speak for our entire staff, but connecting books and customers is one of my favorite parts of librarianship. It always makes my day when a reader leaves the library excited about a book they have in hand. Now that you have a great list of great new books to choose from, you might also enjoy participating in our Adult Summer Reading Program. Just like with the youth version, you'll track the number of minutes you spend reading using our website, the Beanstack app, or an intricately designed coloring page. I can't wait to color mine. For reaching milestones along the way, adults can earn a prize like a journal or a koozie, as well as tickets to participate in one of several raffles. Each raffle includes a Kindle Fire without ads and a gift card to a local business. This year's gift cards include Dog-Eared Books, Chocolaterie Stom, Morning Bell Coffee Roasters, Cook's Emporium, and Worldly Goods. All this writing about books makes me want to go read the next book on my list. I just need to remember to keep track of those minutes. And that was your Ames Library Notes. In just a little bit of time for one sports story, this one is from about ISU men's college basketball. When Jamie Pollard announced Iowa State was looking for a new head men's basketball coach, he pledged whoever the new coach would be would have to understand that we're going to have to be very creative financially in order to make all of this work in the face of paying former coach Steve Prohm's buyout and the headwinds of the COVID-19 pandemic. TJ Otzelberger's newly released contract suggests he was amenable to an innovative contract structure. The new Cyclones coach will receive $1.5 million in total compensation per year in a deal that runs through 2026 and features a number of incentives and provisions that could impact his pay, according to the contract released to the Ames Tribune and the Des Moines Register after a public records request. Otzelberger's total compensation is structured as follows. Base compensation, $300,000 a year. Additional compensation, $700,000 a year. Retirement benefits, $300,000 per year. Premiums for supplemental death benefit, $200,000 per year. Iowa State also agreed to a, quote, reimbursable employee business expense of up to $3.4 million to Otzelberger for the full buyout required by his contract at UNLV, where he coached for two seasons before leaving for Iowa State in March. If it's determined that the buyout payment results in Otzelberger owing additional taxes, the university has agreed to additional payments to cover those expenses. The federal income taxes of $3.4 million taxed at the highest marginal rate of 37% could run over $1 million for Iowa State. In the event Iowa State fires Otzelberger without cause, it will owe him all money remaining on his contract to be paid in monthly installments. If after being terminated, however, Otzelberger is hired on by another NCAA Division I program or professional franchise, there will be a dollar-for-dollar reduction in the amount owed by Iowa State and by his new annual salary. If Otzelberger leaves for another Division I or NBA job, he owes Iowa State 100% of the remaining compensation left on his contract. The number's cut in half, though, if Pollard is no longer Iowa State's athletic director at the time of Otzelberger's departure. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ames Tribune for Tuesday, June 29th, 2021. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a shout, iris@iowaradioreading.org or 515-243-6833. I'm your reader, Mary Frances. It's been a pleasure. See you soon.